Good afternoon. This is Use Your Words Author Speak, and I'm Elise Stewart, and I'm here with my co-host, J.J. Amomoro-Wilson.
Hello, everybody.
And we have a special person that we would like to introduce to you today on Use Your Words. Sit down and relax. This is a great show, and we're very happy to have Tim Z. Hernandez. And J.J. will tell you a little bit more about him.
Tim is a writer and a performance artist. He's received the American Book Award for Poetry, the Colorado Book Award, the International Latino Book Award for Historical Fiction. His work has featured in the LA Times, the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, and on NPR. He was a finalist for the Split This Rock Freedom Plow Award for his work on locating the victims of the 1948 Los Gatos Canyon plane wreck. And that's the incident that inspired his wonderful, wonderful book, All They Will Call You. He's also an assistant professor at the University of Texas El Paso's bilingual MFA program in creative writing. He's a wonderful writer, wonderful speaker, wonderful person. Tim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Great. Thank you. I'm so glad you're on the end of the line.
Yeah, we're happy. Yeah. Happy to have you. Thank you.
Tim, yeah, we had you recently over in our little Silver City for the Southwest Festival of the Written Word. You were a big, big hit. Your session had amazing feedback. Everybody loved it. Everybody I've spoken to absolutely loves the book. Did you have a good time here?
I had a great time there, and I really can't wait to get back there. You know, I've heard so much about Silver City, and just have the opportunity to go out there and be a part of that wonderful festival there. It was just a great, great time. Great time and beautiful people, just really genuine folks out there. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to ask you first, Tim, how did you come to write this particular story? What inspired you to bring this out?
Well, you know, it's kind of how a lot of my books have come about, and that's that, you know, I'm at the right place at the right time. You know, I'm at an intersection between different worlds, and I happen to have my radar open. And so, and that's what happened with this one. You know, I was actually doing some research for a previous novel, and I was researching 19... I'm from the San Joaquin Valley where that incident took place. I'm from here, and a lot of my books are about this place here in Central California. So that said, as I was doing research for a previous novel, I came across this newspaper article that just, and it said 100 people see an airplane fall out of the sky, you know, very jarring headlines. So I started to, you know, just kind of dig into that a little bit. And again, not even seriously considering it as a book because I was already working on a novel at the time, but just kind of looking at it and then just finding interest in that historical, you know, article. And so by the time I was done reading it, I realized that this is, I said to myself, hey, this is the same incident that Woody Guthrie wrote that song about, that I had grown up listening to, that was sung by Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton and Bob Dylan and all my favorite folks, Bruce Springsteen. And I didn't know, and I'd known about the song, but I never knew that it happened in Los Gatos Canyon, which is Fresno County, where I'm from. That I always thought it was Los Gatos, California, which is what most folks have thought over the many years, that it was in Los Gatos, California, near the coastal town of Monterey. But no, it happened right here inland in Fresno County, in my backyard, pretty much. So once I realized that, I thought, gosh, you know, it was just one of those things where I put the newspaper article aside, and that curiosity just stayed with me for a couple of years until I started to just scratch the surface.
I know you've spoken a little bit about this at other festivals, but it was a lot of research, wasn't it? It was years of painstaking research trying to find or identify who these people were. Would you like to just tell us a little more about that, about, well, who was on the plane and all the work you did to find out more about their identities?
Yeah, there was a lot of research. But, you know, strangely, the way that it came about, again, this to me is very much the sister book to my previous novel, which is called Mañana Means Heaven. And it was about in 1947, Fresno County, about a farm worker woman. And I have to say that because it was, as I was doing the research for that novel, every time I would, you know, they were parallel, you know, that story and this one about the plane crash. So that every time I was doing research for that novel, again, not thinking ahead of that novel, really not thinking that All They Will Call You would become a book one day, just kind of looking for that novel, I would find information accidentally, you know, accidentally about this plane crash. I would come upon information that I thought, wow, well, this should go to this folder. I started to accumulate a folder. I said, this will go into that folder called Plane Crash Book or Plane Crash Ideas. And, and so I kept, and every time I was doing this research for this book, I got more information about the next one. So that's what I started to do was, and by the time I was done with them, and you know, and I began to realize and kind of accept the fact that I was working on a new book also towards the last few months of writing Mañana Means Heaven. I said, gosh, you know, I've already accumulated a couple 100 pages of on this other book, and the way that I was accumulating information for that other book was or the writing anyways was that I'm a big journaler. You know, I journal a lot, and especially about my own process and my own writing and my own curiosities, my own research. I journal. And so I was journaling quite a bit about this plane crash idea. And in fact, I originally wrote it. This is when I realized I had a book, as I originally wrote a chapter that was going to be included in Mañana Means Heaven. And it was a chapter where my main character, B. Franco, is contemplating the plane crash. Mm. And that was how it was going to... And almost, I wrote this chapter. It never made it into Mañana Means Heaven. And yet I still have that chapter, and it became another book.
Oh, wow. So, wow.
Gosh. Yeah, so the research was really... like I said, most of the research began here, but, I wanted to find out what happened, who I witnessed the crash itself, the Los Gatos crash. So I went up into the canyon and knocked on doors. Folks around these parts pretty much stay here for generations. Mm. And so I knocked on doors, and some of the families were still there and had memory of the plane crash. And so I was fortunate to get that information. Mm. The hardest part then would be to find the families of the passengers themselves, which, you know, I ended up later on. Trying to do.
You went into Mexico, didn't you?
That's correct. Yeah. So this research or this work began since the moment I saw the newspaper article. That was in 2010, like December of 2010. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, seriously pursue this as a book or any kind of research until about 2012. Yeah, that's when I started to. Mm-hmm. That's when I surrendered to the idea that this is something I better work on.
Surrender.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah. That's when I started to. And then it would take me about from 2012 to 2015. I did as much work as I possibly could from here in the United States, and I gathered so much information about families back in Mexico. I found two family members here in the United States just with my efforts here, but I had so much information, but it was all in Mexico. And I knew that the only thing left for me to do was to go into Mexico. So with the help and funding of UTEP, where I work at now, I was able to go out there to do some research in Mexico, in central Mexico, in 2015 in January. And that's how I ended up finding a couple of other families and decided I had enough to at least to write this book.
Yeah.
Right. And for anyone who hasn't seen this book, All They Will Call You, it is about the plane crash that happened on January 28th, 1948, when 28 people from Mexico, or maybe a few more than that, were deported back to Mexico on a plane that caught on fire and crashed, and everyone on board was killed. And so this is the event that we're talking about, and that Tim has so thoroughly researched and found some surviving family. So, and even I was really touched that you were able to work with getting headstones for, yes, that was quite something in 2013.
May I add something to the story, Elise?
Please.
I think one of the key things that you've just missed out in your little summary is what happened after they all died and what came out in the newspapers.
Right.
Yeah.
And the fact is, none of the Mexican deportees were named, were they? And that was a big part of your research, wasn't it, Tim? They only named the white pilot, etc., but they didn't actually name the 28.
Right. And if they did name them, they mixed them all up with throwing A's and making men into women.
Will you tell us a little bit about that, Tim?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that was the launching point. When I read that newspaper article and I knew that song, I instantly said to myself that those song lyrics are right. There was no list of names. There was no naming of the Mexican passengers. Only names of the four American crew members were mentioned. But the 28 or the reportedly 28 Mexican passengers were simply referred to as deportees in all of the newspaper articles at that time.
Yeah.
At least the mainstream media, Associated Press, United Press International. And, you know, I've since been doing the research, you know, a couple of I've heard a couple of excuses for that, and one is that, you know, well, at that time it would have been too much to clump or put all the names on the newspaper. You know, it would have taken up too much space, and so we had to generalize and call them deportees or give them some kind of a label. And then the other one was that, you know, they didn't know who those passengers were, so how could they have put any names? Well, in my research, I discovered that they did, in fact, have the list of names. Not only did they have the manifest, but they also knew exactly the hometowns where each passenger was from in Mexico. They also knew the last known address, residence of each passenger in Mexico, and they also had access to the surviving family members' names of all those passengers. So they had all that information. That was there, and it was available. And then as far as that other excuse of the justification for not putting in there, which was, you know, that they would have taken them too much space, 3 months prior to that accident, in October of 1947, 3 months before this plane crash at Los Gatos, a very similar Douglas DC-6 airplane crashed in Bryce Canyon, Utah, killed over 52 passengers, and all of them were named, every passenger named in the mainstream media, and also profiles and photographs of all 52 passengers. That was 3 months before this one.
Right.
So there were choices being made, obviously.
Yes.
And in this case, the choice being, you know, we're not concerned with how the Mexicans or who they are. We're concerned with only the American citizens. That was the reason for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, early on then, my first task was to find the accurate and confirmed list of names. And that wouldn't come to me. I mean, I went to the Hall of Records and I went to the church, of course. They were the first people I went to. That list of names, the accurate one didn't come to me until I met the first family, the Ramirez family. When I met them, they had, in their, you know, in their own family archives that they had been saving since 1948, an old Spanish independent newspaper published for the Mexican farm working community in Fresno County. And that newspaper published all those details that I just mentioned about the family passengers and who they were. And that's when I said, wow, this right here is the, you know, this is it. This is the holy grail of what I need, of the information.
Yeah.
And it was with that strip of newspaper that I went looking for the rest of the families.
Yeah, yeah. Extraordinary. I've got to ask you, was there any point at which you thought to yourself, okay, this happened 65 years ago, lots of people are gone, they're missing, I can't find them, I don't know where they are, I'm going nowhere with my research. Was there any point at which you felt like giving up?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Right. You know, I think, you know, the first thing was, you know, a lot of the resistance that I received every time I'd go knocking on a door, you know, it was like, well, that was 65 years ago. Why the interest all of a sudden, or why the concern all of a sudden? You know, and I had no articulate answer for those questions at that time. For me, it was just a kind of very instinctual curiosity. I needed to know who those passengers were. I wanted to know the names. And that was where it all started. And who they were. Once I found the names, it was very much, you know, now I want to know their stories. Who are they? What are the stories, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, and it was my doubt was always about, I'm not going to find them. This was, you know, almost 7 decades, and they were either in Mexico or, you know, who knows where they're at.
Yeah.
And for one. And for two, once I started to gather a lot of information, then it was, well, what's the story here? What is the book about? How do I put a book like this together?
Yeah.
That was all the doubts came out from that.
Yeah.
my mind for trying it? Is it too ambitious? You know?
Yeah. Hold that thought, because we're going to take a little break, a 1 minute break. You are listening to Use Your Words, Writers Speak. We are interviewing Tim Z. Hernandez, author of The Magnificent All They Will Call You. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Welcome back to Use Your Words, Authors Speak. And today we have the pleasure of having Tim Z. Hernandez with us, who is the author of All They Will Call You, which talks about the event in 1948 of kind of a mysterious plane crash in which people were being deported back to Mexico and everyone lost their lives. But no one was listed as far as who they were. And so this is a mystery that Tim has been unraveling and ended up writing an entire book about.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, wow. We're just very pleased. I love the book. And one thing I really loved was how you wrote it with the details of all of the people that you interviewed, finding seven families It doesn't sound like a lot of 28 people, but it must have been incredibly painstaking. And I feel like I've come to know them in the pages of the book, the way that you just gave us a window into their lives and what they loved and who they loved. It's extremely readable. It's a great tribute. Thank you for doing it. I wonder, we were just talking about why there was only a list of the true names of the people in a small newspaper called El Faro, and you happen to come across with the first family that you found, and you've already mentioned why that could happen, which kind of ties us into the title of All They Will Call You Is Deportee. You
know, right.
The song that was a poem by Woody Guthrie and then a tune by Martin Hoffman. You want to say any little bit more about that?
One of the things that happened early on, before the book was even, halfway, before the manuscript first drafts were halfway done, one of the first things that, as soon as I found the list of names, one of the first things I did was to go to the church and say, you know, how do we right this historical wrong? You know, how do we install a memorial headstone here on their burial site? And I should say for the listeners that this was actually in January 1948, this was actually considered the largest mass burial site in California at the time. And it was an unmarked mass burial site in which the remains of the 28 Mexican passengers were basically, you know, shoved into this giant hole here at Holy Cross Cemetery in Fresno, California, and it remained unmarked for 7 decades.
Wow.
Until I started to poke around there. And so when I found the list of names, the first thing I did was ask the church, how do we right the wrong? How do we put a headstone here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And fortunately, they were on board. And the reason they were on board, as Mr. Roscon, who's the cemetery director there, said to me, he said, look, for us, it's a no-brainer. What we do here is we provide a basic service for all human beings, and that is to put their names on a headstone when they're buried in our cemetery. Mm. That's a basic right. So he said, yeah, let's try and raise the money, and let's get permission from the bishop and all that. And that's what we started to do together. And within 4 months, myself, Mr. Roscon, and a musician here in town named Lance Canales, we all sort of combined our efforts and raised about $14,000. And in Labor Day of 2013, we installed a brand-new headstone with the names of all 32 passengers, not just the 28 Mexican passengers,
yeah,
but also the 4 American crew members. And the reason for that, it was very significant for us because, you know, omissions or these kind of erasures, you know, are wrong no matter what part of society has that
right
done to them, you
yes
know, and
yes
we didn't want to repeat that. So it was very, very important for us to say, look, here's the example. This is what you do when you dignify everybody by providing their names on a headstone and providing their names at the very least. And so we put all 32 names of all the passengers there. And then in the old foundation of that new memorial headstone is the old placard that was once there, and it was anonymous and had been there for years. And it just says 28 Mexican citizens died in a plane crash. Rest in peace. That's all it says. And so we've had that there now since 2013.
Yeah.
That's wonderful,
wonderful
work. It's a great story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually have a recording, do we not, Elise?
We do.
What's the name of the song?
Oh, well, I think it would be called
Plane Wreck at Los Gatos. Do we want to hear a minute of it? Can we hear a minute of it?
Sure.
All right. Our technician, our engineer, our number one man, Kyle, is working on it right now just to play us
okay,
a piece
great
of this.
Is it sung by Greg Renfro?
Greg Renfro, who is our
local musician.
Oh, wonderful.
Here we go.
Here we go.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotten. The oranges pile in their creosote dumps. They're flying them back to the Mexican border to pay all their money to wait back again. Goodbye to my Juan, goodbye Rosalito, adios mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have your names when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deported. your tears. My father's own father, he waded this river. They took all the money he had in his life. My brothers and sisters come working the fruit trees. They rode the truck till they took down and died.
Some of us are illegal and some are not wanted. Our work contract's out and we have to move on.
600 miles to the Mexican border.
They chase us like outlaws, like rustlers, like thieves.
Goodbye to my Juan, goodbye Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos, Jesús y María. You won't have your names when you ride the big aeroplane. All they will call you will be deportee.
So, Tim, we've talked a lot about All They Will Call You and the research that went into it and the true life story. And but
right.
Actually, as you read it, you, the author, you get into their heads, you get into their minds, and it becomes like a novel. We get dialogue, we get interior monologue. And I was just wondering, how on earth do you categorize this book? Because it seems to have elements of fiction and nonfiction. Do you categorize it?
No, I don't, you know, I'm not big on categories, you know,
no,
I mean,
no.
Other than they're one of those necessary evils, I suppose, you know, because they have to find the right shelf to put a book on.
Exactly. So, and your publisher needs to know. Yeah.
Right, exactly. In order to sell the book, they need to know what to call it. And that's always been kind of an area that's always been a little sticky with me and publishers. I want to defy these categories. And they're like, well, we have to. And so anyway. What we ended up calling it was a documentary novel.
Documentary novel, okay.
Documentary novel, yeah. Although it's filed in the Library of Congress as nonfiction. And the reason why is because, you know, the book is not. Well, the book is based on actual events with actual people, and as you see and as you read, there are actual testimonies, interviews with people, records.
Yes.
So the book is all in service of a truth.
Yes.
And I say that because the book itself breaks down that there are numerous versions of truth, you know, and I say that meaning like, if you know, when I interview two people standing who I witnessed the same accident, they have two sometimes opposing accounts of what took place.
Yep.
And I come from a humanities background. And so for me, one of the things is always let those two various viewpoints and experiences stand on their own as a larger truth, speak to a larger sense of what occurred, not just in the accident itself, but also in the lives of the people that I'm talking about, the passengers themselves. You know, one family member might say, oh, well, Guadalupe was a very, you know, staunch man, and he seldom smiled. And the other family member will say, no, he wasn't. He was a joker. My job then is not to find out, well, let me distinguish which one is, to judge which one is the truth and which one is not and which one, you know, is more accurate. Mine is to say, let all of those stand on their own as our rememberings of these people and our rememberings of this incident, which to me is a much more closer to maybe oral history.
Yes.
Which Judge Turkle was perhaps doing. And so for me, that was one of the most important factors of the book. Now, there is the one area where I do take leaps of imagination and by putting actual words into some of those people's mouths that I could have not possibly known.
Yeah.
And in those instances, again, those are not just, like, I'm not merely fabricating. I'm actually, what they were as I'm listening, as a family, for example, talking, and I'm sitting there talking with people who are family members who had firsthand accounts of these folks, who had interacted with them personally. And as they're telling me stories, they're saying, Guadalupe would have said this to his wife. Well, I remember Micaela would tell him this. And, you know, and so I was writing all these down and visualizing in my head a scenario. We can't help it. When someone tells us a story for us, we can't help but visualize that happening, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And so I allowed myself to visualize that. And I allowed myself to then guess at some of the words that were based on, you know, what the families remembered on how these people, their characters, of how they were and what they said and what they spoke like. And so I was really very much trying, you know, it was very much in service of their memory, the memories of who these folks were. And more importantly than getting the data right, I was more interested in the reader sharing a three-dimensional space with these people.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted them to walk around in the room with them also, not just sure. know something about them.
Yeah, that's...
You know, but to interact... So that was why I made that choice.
Yeah, yeah. So more than fact, you're dealing in truth, aren't you? You're creating something
right.
which builds a bigger truth.
That's right. That's yeah. the idea. That's exactly the idea. And a collective yeah. truth, you know, a collective truth, not yeah. by any one definition, but by many.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we only have 1 minute left. I was just going to ask you, what's next for you, Tim? I know you're touring and you're traveling and you're talking about the book. What about writing and teaching? What's yeah. next for you?
Well, you know, I'm always teaching there at the University of Texas El Paso's MFA program there. I'm with the online program, so that's always nice. And a bunch of students coming out with great stuff, and as you well know there. But as personally, as for my own projects, I'm actually, right now I'm working on a little bit of screenwriting, writing a screenplay.
Wow.
And I'm also piddling around right now with ideas for a possible next book that has to do a lot with how men of color all across the United States, and actually internationally as well, men of color are dying at the hands of the authorities,
right.
You
Great.
Know, in very unjustified
yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of, and because I have an experience, a personal experience with that in my life. And so
right.
I'm
right.
looking at that. Those are kind of some of the subjects I'm looking at right now. And we'll see what happens, though. We'll see how those manifest
okay.
or not down the road.
we need to stop. Tim Zierlandes, thank you so much for coming
you,
on the
Tim.
Program. It's been wonderful to talk to you. We wish you the best of luck with all the call you and in the future.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks,
Tim. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And your fine work also, JJ. Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
You guys have a great day.
Same to you. Thank you.